This is the United Podcast Network.
This is Voices in Validation, brought to you by IVT Network. IVT Network is your expert source for life science regulatory knowledge. Voices in Validation brings you the best in validation and compliance topics. We interview industry experts from pharma, biotech, med devices, and laboratories. Here is the host of Voices in Validation, Stacy.
We're back. Lori, I know that we talked a lot about behaviors and attitudes in our previous episode, but what do you believe is this concept of risk curiosity, and how important is it in terms of building this healthy risk culture? So talk us through what you mean by this term, risk curiosity.
Yeah, so actually that's something I've really embraced in my current role. And it kind of came about because I'm leading currently a risk culture initiative. And so I've been very passionate about, as in my former life as a consultant, I built a lot of tools, a lot of processes, and a lot of procedures. But I didn't always get to be a part of evolving the risk culture that really is important to make all those things come to realization and be successful. And so I started down this track of defining what is a risk culture with a cross-functional team that I have. And what was interesting is, and I asked some very open-ended questions during a workshop of what comes to mind when you hear the word risk? And as Gada kind of alluded to and discussed in terms of the human heuristics and bias piece, is risk comes with fear. And that's very much programmed into us as a human, right, from a primitive level. Risk comes and is associated with survival. I must survive this risk. I must fight this risk. You know, I must arm up against it, right? So that was kind of a lot of the language I got is risk is scary. I'm fearful of it. It sounds bad. And so that was open and honest, and I loved it. Now, some people did see risk as opportunity, right, which is what I think we're trying to go towards with this risk culture is really opening up, and Vivian alluded to that, is to identifying those things before they're realized. And so that should be considered an opportunity. So as I was kind of thinking and exploring and working with the team, someone, and I'll never know who, because we can never go back in time and remind ourselves, so I hope I don't take credit for something that someone else said, mentioned the word curious during this conversation of all these folks. And that just really resonated with me. And as I've kind of shopped this idea of being risk curious around, it sort of changes people's thought. It's like, oh, now I'm kind of open. I guess I need to understand the risk. It may be good. It may be bad, right? And let's face it, in pharmaceuticals, we wouldn't be where we are today with a vaccine, you know, completely ready for distribution by December if we didn't take some risk, right? And understand the risk that we're taking. And I think that's the difference is people here taking risk as being edgy and like sort of out there. But no, sometimes you can take risk at an educated level. I understood the risk I was taking, but I also evaluated the benefit, right? Mm-hmm. And so my understanding is, let's just use the vaccine as an example, being risk curious, is this vaccine, my understanding is, comes with some side effects in terms of how we're going to feel, right, after we get this injection. We're probably not going to feel good for a couple days, that kind of thing. But when we weigh the benefit against it, and the impact of COVID-19 and what that's done to the world and to the people's health and to our economies, that far outweighs maybe how I'm going to feel a little ill or a little sort of achy for a couple days. So those are kind of the things that I think we need to evaluate when we're being risk curious is understanding and being open to, I'm just exploring here. Is this a risk worth taking? Is the benefit far outweigh the risk? Or do I need to really mitigate this risk a lot lower before I move forward? Do I need to accept this risk? I mean, I think using that language sort of changes the mindset a little bit. And so down the road, I actually had a new member join my culture team. And when she first joined this team, she was very open and honest and said, oh, when I hear risk, I think, you know. And then I said, hey, can I invite you to hear the language risk curious? What does that feel like to you? And she goes, I kind of hear what you're saying. Now I'm open. I'm understanding. It doesn't mean I have to take the risk, right? Maybe the risk is really bad and I shouldn't take that. But it means I'm open and I'm understanding and I'm hearing what sort of the impact could be to that. So I've been kind of shopping that language around. I'm curious to hear, you know, other thoughts as well on that. But it seems to have had an impact on people to use that language. I think it's going to make an impact to the risk culture overall.
Lori, I like something you mentioned, opportunity. right? Mm-hmm. Perhaps we can say quality opportunity management. I know it doesn't sound like QRM, QOM, QOM, right? QOM. But I think that's a great concept, right? Because mm-hmm. the risk is here. What we truly mean is the opportunity to find something and mitigate it, right? So I really like that word opportunity. I'm going to steal that from you.
Yeah, that's totally fine with that. I mean, I think it's something that's so funny that we struggle with this risk culture in our industry, because we're taking risk all the time. I mean, we're innovating, we're challenging. I mean, gene therapy, who would have thought, right? Like 50, 60 years ago, or I'm a transplant recipient. I'm literally walking around with someone else's kidney inside my body. That was a risk, right? When someone did that for the first time. And so, you know, I think when we're saying risk curious, we're not saying go out and just take risk, you know, mm-hmm. haphazardly. We're saying, you know, let's understand that risk. Do we need to mitigate it? Is it a risk worth taking? Is it not a risk worth taking? I think it leaves the language kind of open, right? And not as fearful and scary.
Yeah. And if I might jump in here, I really like what you're saying about this, Laurie, because it's the opening up of the discussion around that potential. Mm-hmm. And the opportunities that it might present is so much better than most of the other tools that we use in the industry are almost driving a closed mindset, whereas this risk curious is a much more growth mindset, you know, where you're having that discussion and your main driver for the discussion isn't about mitigating it into a green or a red, yellow, right, or orange color. You know, that's the, whereas many of our tools, the way they're structured is that if it falls on the wrong side of the threshold, and God help us, I hate that threshold, you know, that if it falls into that red, and I know we spoke about that earlier on, our whole driver in the meeting is not about discussing the opportunities. It's about pushing it into the next zone so that we don't, you know, we can move forward onto the next item on our list. So I really like that idea of opening it up to, you know, to lift the lid and look under the hood, as they say. But Vivian, what as an ex regulator, what do you think about this risk curious concept? And perhaps, you know, maybe you could share some of your experiences, not only that you had at the MHRA, but I know that you were also a member of the PICS expert circle on QRM in trying to develop competencies around inspecting risk and management programs. Yeah. So what might you share there with us?
Yeah, sure. Well, I think being risk curious is a positive thing and it should be encouraged because, in the first half of this episode, we discussed about a healthy risk culture to encourage employees to speak up, and there should be any open culture where constructive challenge is welcomed as well. So this can increase the transparency and the acknowledgement of risk, either that they are identifiable or they have a hidden one that, you know, it just creeping out of the woodwork. But and also in addition, the risk curious also allows the leadership to gain more respect and confidence from their employees and to inspire them to develop a more trusting and a more cooperative relationships with other colleagues as well. So, and you're quite right. Obviously, when the time that I was with the PICS QRM's expert circle, we kind of like working on a lot of to revise the guidance documents, either for the industry or for the inspectorate as well. Because obviously, we've been talking about risk management, risk culture in the pharma industry. However, inspectors and regulatory authorities also apply quality risk assessment in their daily operations and activities as well. So examples like, you know, assessing regulatory filing, making risk-based decisions on suspected quality defects, or assessing licenses or personnel to be on their license as well. Another side is you know, using the risk tool to identify it, to plan, and also conducting of the inspection. And obviously, being inspectors, being auditors, we use risk as well to identify and to prioritize any inspection finding so that we can generate that risk rating for the company based on the outcome of that audit. So during my times with the PICS experts circle, one of the goals for the team was to review and to update existing document. And there are two, I find that it's very, very useful, and it's also, you know, is also good for industry to reference to as well. So the two major documents, one of them is called a recommended model for risk-based inspection planning in the GMP environment. So in this document, it provides a simple and quantitative QRM tool that can be used by the inspectorate to prioritize the sites for inspections when planning for their frequency and also the scope of each inspection as well. And the second one is the assessment of QRM implementation. So this is the AMMOIR, and it includes you know, crucial indicators, and also there are many other questions within that AMMOIR as well that you can use as a bit of a checklist or as a guide to prompt the inspectors, you know, what kind of questions is good to ask depending on the area and depending on the circumstances. So that is to assist the GMP inspectors to assess the QRM implementation in industry. So although we keep saying that it's a GMP document, however, those information in that document is also very, very useful in other GXP inspections as well. And these two documents are publicly available on the website, and I really recommend to have a, to take a look at it.
I love that document, Vivian, the one I've highly recommended it as a consultant. It's fantastic. And people used to ask me all the time when I was consulting, like, how do you go in? What do you do to us? Like, I had a magic secret, you know, like formula. And I said, it's PICS and it's available online for free, yeah. Right? It's just a fantastic document. So I appreciate
and
that.
We will link to that in the show notes as well.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah. And yeah. Lastly, I was going to add to the risk curious piece that I also changed and got it. You were talking about, you know, mm-hmm. the opportunity and such. And Nuala, you mentioned the tools kind of confining us. I actually changed my facilitation style now. So to kind of embrace that risk curious culture, I actually facilitate risk assessments using mind map now. And so I literally come in, and for those who may not know what mind map is, it's got, you know, sort of several formats, but I use a very simplistic version, which is I put that sort of risk curious question, if you will, in the center, and then I'm building out that risk assessment from there. And let me tell you something, it has freed people. Now, it doesn't mean that I'm not going to go back to the traditional FMEA and sort of input that data in there and have that, you know, semi-quantitative analysis to go with that, to support that, those decisions, but it frees people to think about risk and not have to be confined to the cells of Excel, if you will. Yeah. So I don't mean that the formal piece doesn't have its part, but to free that risk curious mind, I had to get away a little bit from facilitating within those tools.
I think you have a point there, Lori. The formal tool, specifically the FMEA, right? There's a fear of FMEA, mm-hmm. right? Like once you say FMEA, then people think long hours and, you know, sitting in a conference room and yeah. and just, you know, trying torture. To figure torture. Yeah, you're right. They do think it's torture. So doing the, you know, the mind map, right? Or like even what if, like it's a very simple yeah. tool. I mean, we use it like the weather is cloudy out there and I'm going to go, let's say, to the store. What if it rains, right? What should I do to prevent me from getting wet? I'll take an umbrella. That's one control, right? So it's simple enough if people truly understand or are risk curious or the opportunity. We're trying not to get wet. So, you know, it's a pretty simple concept.
Yeah, and just on that simple concept, you know, the point you make, Garda, is, you know, we make risk-based decisions every day. in our daily lives, whether that's hopping on our bicycle or driving our car, we do, or going to the store and deciding, do we need an umbrella? So why is it that it's so hard? Is it because we have these like very structured tools? Why is it that it's so hard for this kind of innate risk-based decision-making skill that we have? Why do we not apply that more liberally in our work environment?
That's a great question, Nuala. And I keep asking myself the same question, and I wonder, like, why, right? What are the roadblocks we face at work? I mean, if I'm going to send an email to my boss, let's say, I'm going to like read it over and over to make sure that I'm not, saying something that is going to offend him, right? So I'm also assessing the risk, right? It's the risk of how my email is going to be read, right, or interpreted. So what is it that, you know, in the manufacturing space that makes us fear the opportunity of identifying potential risk? Is it our focus on just getting the drug out to ensure that we have no drug shortage, right? So we're always thinking of the patient, or is it that we truly don't understand the concept of risk management? And I'm going to say a concept of opportunity management. I know from experience, if you, during risk assessments that I've done, if you really explain to operators on the shop floor the concept, I mean, it's amazing the change. Then they'll tell you, yes, now I understand. This is an issue. This is, you know, we can fix this. We can do this. But if there's no actual understanding of the whole concept, it's very difficult for people to accept the word risk. And I think that's the roadblock for us, is that word risk.
Yeah. And I think, I don't know, Vivian, do you have something you want to share there about that, you know, how do we get that everyday risk-based decision-making to become in the, you know, part of the workflow in our work environments?
Well, obviously it is important. First of all, I think that, training is very important for everybody to understand, you know, what is risk management, what it is all about. As you say, you know, we say that people doesn't like the word risk. They're going to fear that, what am I going to find, right? So I think education is the key to kind of like let them to understand this is not going to be bad. We're just going to do this exercise. We're going to find what is wrong. And so we can actually take the appropriate action. And I think that's why when you say, the employee did not want to speak up, it's because they don't want to get themselves into trouble. Right. Mm-hmm. So I think it is very important. They need to understand. I think what I don't see enough is, you know, as I say, every company will have a procedure on QRM, but how many people will be trained to use it? Mm-hmm. Right. You know, I think it should be a basic minimum that everybody should read the procedure, understanding ICH Q9, you know, even the basic knowledge, so that even the people or the workers on the shop floor, that they know when it's the risk, that it's, you know, how they identify it, and obviously following through their process and procedure so that they know there's a channel they can report it to and go into that system for the, you know, QRM process. And obviously, yes, we normally see that doing those assessments will be a big group of all the departmental managers. So they're in the senior level, right? And now obviously they have more experience, you know, technical expertise as well. And obviously that also can help them to make the judgment and also making that decisions correctly based on their knowledge and also based on their experience within the company and process and operations as well.
Thanks, Vivian. And actually, just to close out on that point, and Laurie, jump in if you wish. But one of the strong senses that I have in this industry is that our compliance culture You know, where we've got all these formal procedures and policies and SOPs, and you know, we've got a sequence of operations, and yet we spend a lot of time and money of our in our organizations hiring the right talent. But because of the compliance culture, we actually almost shut down their proactivity or their sense of empowerment and ownership, because we say, just do what it says in this SOP, just follow the sequence of events, make sure that the batch manufacturing record or the method, you know, the laboratory method you're following, just do as it says on this page. And you'll be good to go. So we don't encourage them to be curious and to raise issues. And I always go back in the culture, you know, to Edgar Schein, and he talks about, you know, the fact that in building healthy cultures, we've got to create a workforce that are proactive problem solvers and perpetual learners. Now, we'll come back to the learning piece, but that proactive problem solving, we spoke a little bit about this the last day on the Speak Up, but it's encouraging people to and empowering them to say, if you see something, raise the flag, so that they're being proactive. So I love that concept of us, you know, that every worker would be a proactive problem solver and perpetual learner. Laurie, do you have anything before you come in, and maybe we can talk a little bit about learning then?
Yeah. So I actually, you hit the nail on the head, I think, Nuala, is that we've kind of unknowingly, I think, as an industry in our efforts to continuously improve and embracing sort of the whole concept of Lean Six Sigma and things like that, I think we've unknowingly sort of stepped the operator or the shop floor level or the analyst away from actually critically thinking at times. And I think that wasn't intentional, but I think we mistake-proofed away so many things to try to like reduce human error. You know, that's been a big effort, right, in the industry. Let's reduce human error. But when we did that, I think sometimes we removed the human from being able to sort of think through things and raise awareness of things. We've sort of told them to push this button. If this alarm goes off, you do this, and just do that is how you described it. And I think that's 100% spot on. And we also stepped away from educating them about why they were doing these things, and what if they didn't do them correctly? What was going to happen? What was going to be the impact? So I did a whole presentation actually recently on critical thinking. And I think that's something that we didn't do intentionally. We weren't setting out to like have the human sort of become this programmed robot. But I think in our efforts to reduce human error and to sort of remove a lot of that free thinking and free will, if you will, within the operation, we kind of unknowingly did that. So then we didn't sort of encourage that risk curious kind of behavior, right? To bring things up and to look at things with a different lens. I think we're reevaluating that, right? I think we're sort of stepping back and saying we need to have the human more engaged. The human's going to do things anyway, regardless of whether we want them to or not. They may work around working that button, you know, or what have you, even as much as we mistake-proof that away. But that gets me into then, how are we educating people then in this space to allow them to be risk curious and sort of think about risk critically? And how do we appropriately train these personnel at all levels within the organization? And I want to reach out to Gada first and then go to Vivian after that, if that's okay, to kind of continue this flow. But Gada, you did a lot of research on sort of QRM competencies. Could you kind of jump into this and share your thoughts on that education piece as
well?
Yeah.
So as part of my studies at DIT with the PRST team, I looked at the QRM role-based competency model, and I think you heard me say or emphasize the need for education and training, right? And the model that I have is divided into three sections: organization, prerequisite, competency levels, and role. And the model shows how the competencies of individual blend into the organizational competency, and the prerequisite, believe it or not, are leadership and culture, right? In addition to QRM strategy, QRM program, and QRM process. So although the roles that I have identified and the competencies are geared more towards individual, I definitely acknowledge that QRM effectiveness is also depending on organizational maturity, right? So the importance of senior management decision maker is extremely stressed by underpinning this group of leaders as foundation for the other roles. So you can't have facilitators, subject matter expert, risk lead without having the support of those decision makers. Leadership must embrace a culture of risk or a culture of opportunities, right? And again, like we said previously, acknowledge the prevention model versus the reaction, the firefighting model. I don't think we should be rewarded for firefighting, right? I think every firefighting event, it should be like a minus one for us, right? It's a completely different shift in the way we are thinking. It requires change management, but it comes from leadership. Right? It comes from the organization risk culture. So I encourage you to check out the PRST website. We have really good examples of these role-based competencies and how the role of senior management supports the risk culture for the organization.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. I think it comes from that top decision-making mm-hmm. world, but also the education and the speaking up and embracing that from the bottom up as well.
Yeah, and Lori, remember in IVT, we published an article, yeah. you and I, about the role of senior management
yes, we did.
Few years ago. Yeah, so it's still relevant. How many yeah. years has it been? Yeah.
I think we're putting a link to it, Stacey, yeah. correct? And at the end of this, too, at the podcast. Yes, 100%. I don't think that's changed at all. Yeah. Unfortunately, so we're still working on it.
We should rev it, right? Yeah. We should go to rev 2.
Yeah. It'll just say 2.0 with no changes.
Yes.
And then Vivian, kind of thinking back into your sort of health authority past too, what else would you consider in terms of how did you kind of seek out education for that? I think you sort of started to touch on that too in the last question.
Yeah. This is, I quite like these topics. And, in terms of training, in terms of people, it's very important because, as I say, end of the day, it's the people going to work there and going to make our products. If I say you're taking some paracetamol because of a headache, and you find out, by the way, the operator who actually manufactured this batch has not been trained properly, what do you feel? That kind of like you just say, I do not believe this, right? So, and that's why, it is important. And, I've got to say, first of all, in the EU GMP guide, the chapter 1 and chapter 2, the requirements to have trained and competent personnel. So obviously that's just doing the day job according to the job responsibility. But obviously you say there's no title. I don't know, there might be some company have somebody with the job title, say QRM experts, that specifically. But obviously we're talking about people here because they are the one, who is the contributions in terms of making the products to ensure that the safety and the quality as well. So it's important that they have the right educations and the competency and the skills to actually do the job. And not just the EU GMP, exactly the same as the EU GDP as well. It talk about people, it talk about risk. And obviously this is a standard requirement in terms of training, having competent staff by many other regulatory authorities as well as a must, right? So funny enough, back in 2017, I did a little research for presentations on QRMs. And I was looking at risk, that's the topic of the presentation. And I thought, okay, obviously we talk about it every day because it happens all the time. It's around us, right? So it's a funny one that I find that the 2002 GMP guide, there were 30 references to risk. And now the current guidelines actually got 230. So you can imagine it's such a big risk focus increased over the years as well. And you see more and more there's requirement on risk management. Yeah. And I think I can say quite rightly that, you know, we can apply the QRM application in every single chapter of the EU GMP, you know, 1 to 9. There's always this risk element in there that you can use to mitigate any problems. So, for example, Chapter 5 easily can be the cross-contamination. Chapter 3 would be a shared facilities. So, you know, the risk elements is always there. It's a matter of, do we know how to use the right tool, and also understanding, well, that the tool is important for use, and obviously important having the knowledge, understanding to choose which one is the appropriate one to use. And the other important one is we need to have experienced and trained staff to contribute into that risk assessment as well, because that will be another key in order to identify the true real problem, so that in order to make the right, correct decisions when you come to do the risk mitigation. So I think that training is very, very important. And also one last thing I want to share with you is I see a very, very good examples in the past as well. So we talk about proactive. We talk about the quota culture should be coming down from senior management, obviously supported by the bottom as well. And one of the examples that I had in the inspection was there was a company that is a share facility, and they're going to bring in a new materials for the product, which is high potent. So obviously it is such an old premises, they cannot just build a brand new facility just for this material. So obviously they need to do a risk assessment there. As we mentioned before, in that meeting room, it tend to be managers, you know, from different departments. So I looked at the risk assessment records, what did they look at, what me through it. And obviously, you know, they chose the correct tool. And what really impressed me is it involved, as I say, because it's obviously the risk culture should be across the whole organization. So even for this project, they have pretty much every single department, from the warehouse, the engineering, QC, manufacturing, and obviously the QA people as well. And that is not the only point. The other point that is really positive and I'm so pleased to see is they didn't only just go into the room themselves. They brought in one of their team, which actually, you know, so it'll be the operators, it'll be the, you know, junior analyst, it'll be a warehouse operators, because end of the day, they are the one who is going to do those daily activities, so they know the process well. So that's why it's important to have the trained and experienced staff to contribute to a good quality assessment with all those information, because some of the things that, you know, with the management, they might be a bit out of touch, they might know what is going on, but end of the day, I would say they are the true people who know exactly what is going on the shop floor, and is the first one to identify any potential risk as well. So with this particular assessment, I was really, really pleased, and I feel that's, you know, obviously they're a very good company and taking the risk culture very seriously by this good example.
I love that example, Vivian. I think that's so great. And I think especially you pointed out even that they were in the room, right? You know, kind of looking at these operations. I think one thing I was going to tell you too, or add to that, is I've never been in a risk assessment that's appropriately cross-functional, to your point, where there hasn't been a wait, what moment. Where the engineer, I'm just going to use an example, the engineer is saying the design, the operator's going, no, that's not how we perform that. And those are such awesome education moments where the two worlds, the design and the operator, sort of collide or meet, and usually things are worked out, you know, really. So a risk assessment is also a learning moment, right? You know, it builds that competency too, I think, even just sitting in that room. And now in our current virtual world, I've been doing lots of risk assessments, and we literally have floor maps up first, and we all walk through the room virtually, if you will, And we look at what's in there and we talk about the operation. And then we go to the mind map and go, okay, what are the concerns we have? And we sort of have to toggle back and forth. But I think those are so critical. And there's been lots of moments, right, where people go, wait, oh, that's what happens during that operation, right? Otherwise, the engineering group worked over here, the operators are writing their SOPs over here, you know, all of those things are happening separately. So I think it's just such a great example of how risk assessments are just so vital, right, to making our processes better. So Nuala, in your education world, and being our current sort of academic person on this team today, why don't you add to your thoughts to that as well?
Yeah, I'm so interested in listening. I can hardly to all of these great examples. I can hardly contain myself. But there's a couple of things that Vivian has mentioned, not just in this example here, but you also mentioned earlier on that you know, you felt that the training of everyone, that risk management should be a skill that everyone has an understanding of at a fundamental level. And I have felt that for so long, that we've had, you know, the QA folks or the QRM folks or, you know, the decision makers, they've had an understanding of some of these principles. But as we move out, as you well know, it's all about the folks in the front line. It's having those junior analysts and explaining the why. We don't explain the why. We do all these SOPs that tell them the what and the how. And we so rarely explain the why and then get them to ask, well, why or why not? So for me, this fundamentals of risk management as almost as part of the GMPs, you know, when you do, you have to do your initial onboarding and you do your GMP training and then you have to do your GMP refresher. I feel there is an absolute role there for fundamentals of risk management. And so in you know, so important, because if you're going to have these truly cross-functional teams involved in assessing risk or identifying risk or coming into a room, that those folks should not feel on the back foot. They should have enough fluency with some of the terminology that it doesn't matter that they've never done, you know, a detailed FMECA before, but they're not frightened of being in a room with some decision makers and maybe some leaders and saying, well, hold on, that's not actually how it works. Or why do we do that? You know, and enabling them to do that. So so as usual, having started life as an engineer 100 years ago in the industry, when, you know, I have an action for or a bias for action. So I went and built this, and I now have a small program developed as e-learning, so it'll be easily consumed by people as a fundamentals of risk management. And I'm hoping, you know, that's going to be available in the new year, and we're working with academic partners in getting that out there for the industry. But I really feel strongly that this should become part of something everybody who works in any GXP role, and that they find the connection to the patient, they understand the importance of asking why, and the fact that their role is in the front line, is as that detector, as we said earlier on. On the other point that you made that I also like is the fact that you know, you raised the point about risk-based decision making. I think Gada was also talking about, you know, the decision makers in that definition from ICHQ9. So I feel the other area that we have these decision makers, and they're often not trained in critical thinking, in design thinking, in actually, you know, being able to look at things from a different perspective, in seeking data and ensuring that they have the right people in the room. We talked about heuristics earlier on. So, you know, they're going off their gut. And that's where we end up with a lot of these cut and paste kappas, where, oh, yeah, we've seen this one before, and let's just apply the last solution, which, by the way, we haven't even assessed the effectivity of. And here we are dealing with recurrence of deviation. And we're doing cookie cutter solutions, you know, because our decision makers are not stepping back from, we need to get this closed because we want to move forward, we want to disposition the batch, we want to progress on the schedule, instead of saying, okay, let's see the data. So my next target is risk-based decision-making skills for the industry, for those decision makers to really And for even to them, for them to understand some of the simple heuristics that are in play when their bias and the way in which they behave in a meeting can shut down the conversation for others and shut down their opportunity to get involved. Believer in lifelong learning, and hopefully, both in the research that we do in TU Dublin, and then, you know, as a practitioner in the field, I'm hoping to solve some of these problems as well, you know.
Thanks, Nuala, and thanks for reminding me that it's TU Dublin, not yes, DIT.
I was going to correct you, but I did not.
100 years. So for sure. So listen, before we close out today, are there any last thoughts around the table about what we've talked about, this risk culture and being risk curious and having, you know, a more open and maybe use of less formal tools? Any last thoughts before we close out?
Yeah, so I'd like to comment on something that you just said, Nuala, which is like the operators on the floor, right? I wonder if we actually go to the floor and ask them, right? Like, what can we do to improve this, let's say, glass breakage? You're getting a lot of glass breakage. What do you think we should do? Mm-hmm. They know the process really well, right? And we should involve them in the solution. And I think that, you know, is from my experience, is a huge win because they get excited. They understand what we're trying to do versus when we take them into a room and sit them there with maybe supervisors or managers. I mean, I'm not sure if they have the courage and candor to just come out and tell us what is really going on versus us going down to the floor, right, and walking the process with them and getting their opinion, right, and involving them in that solution and identifying the opportunities for improvement. And lastly, I want to say thank you, Nuala, Lori, and Stacey, and of course Vivian, for this wonderful chat, and I hope I get invited again.
Maybe.
I love QRM, as you know. My PhD is in QRM. So now that you said maybe, Lori, I expect to be invited.
I'll think about it. I'll let you know.
but I do want to thank you for this wonderful opportunity.
Yeah, and same here as well. I really enjoy taking part in these sessions and share my learning. So thank you very much.
I just want to thank both of you for coming on today. I think we greatly appreciate it. We got a 2-for-1 out of this with some of the sessions we've done. So I think that's been fantastic. But I was going to close out with one last comment. Just if we take anything away from this, I think it's, you know, which there was a lot. And I think I'll also second that I nerd out every time we do these sessions. And I think that it's evident with all of us, right, that we love talking about risk management. But be risk curious, and let's not be afraid as an industry to reward identifying proactively these risks. And we can still identify fire or reward firefighting too, but why not end, right? And the prevention too, and the proactive thinking. We're sort of always at that back end. Let's move up forward, right? And I think we'll get a whole different culture out of it.
Yeah, for sure. So we've also said one of our goals in this podcast is to actually make some resources available. And we have our key takeaways. And so this time round, we've got some lovely takeaways. We mentioned some of them in discussion as we were going on. And hats off again to JBT because they got a lot of us involved 5 years ago. Can you believe it was Christmas 2015 when we did a 10-year anniversary special edition of the JBT journal with 11 articles in it around 10 years on from ICH Q9. Now we're 15. Now Q9 is a teenager and troublesome. And of course it's all grown up and one of the key contributors to that edition was Dr. Kevin O'Donnell, and he is of course involved in leading the revision 2 of Q9 now as we see it. So that's it. I think we're going to provide a link to that. There's still all of the articles there were from various thought leaders, some really great ideas. And we haven't seen them all come into play yet. So there's still room for a readout on that. One of the other articles that's much more recent, it's hot off the press, and I'm hoping that Stacey will be able to provide a link to it, because it is, in closing this, I think it's important. We've been talking about risk, and this is risk revolution. But the two twin enablers, the dual enablers of Q9 or Q10, are risk and knowledge. And one of our other colleagues from Merck, Marty Lipper, the executive director of knowledge management at Merck, who's also doing research with the TU Dublin, has produced a lovely article with Dr. Kevin O'Donnell from the HPRA on risk and knowledge and the risk knowledge continuum, infinity loop. And I really would urge you, it's a fabulous concept, and I urge you to link in there and have a look about the importance of your risk can reduce as your knowledge of your processes and products increase. And if you have low level of knowledge, your risk is increased and you're going to have to respond in kind. And then just finally, we also obviously will provide the link to the AID memoir that we love, the PICS document. And one last shout out that I think, seen as we were talking about culture, ISPE produced a nice report on cultural excellence. And there's some, you know, general organizational culture pieces for the life science sector in there. And I think it's worth, if you haven't already touched base with that, there's a nice body of work available specifically written for the biopharmaceutical industry. So lots of takeaways for our listeners today. And thank you, everybody. And over to you, Stacey, to close us out.
So many great takeaways for our listeners. I'm sure they'll appreciate getting all those little extras, you know, tools that they can really add to their working toolkit. So I appreciate you sharing those with us. And I want to thank, big thank you to our Risk Revolution leaders, Laura and Nuala. And thank you as well to Gada and Vivian for sharing their expertise. It's been great having all four of you with us for these past two episodes of Risk Revolution. And I also want to give a big shout out to Ben Kitchen, our producer, and the Studio 21 Podcast Cafe. Lastly, we are so grateful to you, our valued listeners, for joining us each week for this podcast. And if you enjoyed this episode, we ask you to subscribe in your podcast player of choice and share with your friends, colleagues, and online networks. We really do appreciate it, and it helps us grow and get more great information out there. If you have topic requests or guest suggestions, we'd love to hear from you about that. And for today's show notes, of course, and all those takeaways that were just mentioned, and more information on this podcast, please visit www.ivtnetwork.com. We'll be back again next week with another great interview. Until then, stay healthy and safe.
The views and opinions expressed by the hosts, guests, or callers of this program do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the Studio 21 Podcast Cafe, the United Podcast Network,